Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Before we move into our topic at hand, once again, we just want to let you know that our friends at Adams Road Band are going to be in the Utah area. Beginning June 25th, they're going to be here for a series of concerts. If you've never heard Adams Road Band, we would encourage you to attend at least one of those concerts that they're going to be having here. If you want more information on that, you can go to adamsroadband.com, and they will give you a list of their schedule on that website. In fact, it's adamsroadband.com backslash schedule.
Calendar, actually.
Calendar. And again, we would encourage you to check them out. A good band, a good group of young guys that really love the Lord and have quite a story to tell. We are, again, looking at early Mormon history through a book titled Mormon Enigma, Emma Hale Smith, written by two Mormon authors, Linda King Newell and Valene Tippetts Avery. We're kind of moving along slowly here, and the reason why we're doing this is because I think it's intriguing when you look at the background of modern Mormonism, how it developed over the years, and you look at the personalities that were involved, especially the personality of Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon movement. Now, as we've mentioned, this book, written by these two Mormon authors, is kind of focusing on how Emma Smith had to put up with a lot of this stuff. And she put up with an awful lot. When you read this story, if you read this book, you can't help but have sympathies towards Emma Smith, the wife of Joseph Smith. A lot of the things that she faced, in my opinion, and I think probably in the opinion of the authors themselves, had to do with some of the blunders made by her husband, both in the spoken word and by his actions. And of course, the wife often has to deal with the brunt of it when the husband acts in a way that's unseemly. And certainly Joseph Smith does act unseemly in a lot of occasions. We're in the time now where they're in Far West. And as we left you the last time, Joseph Smith had gone a couple days after his son was born, Alexander, was born, he heads for Adamondiamon. And as we mentioned yesterday, Adamondiamon was a place that Joseph Smith said Adam and Eve actually fled to after they were expelled from the Garden of Eden. And in Mormon theology, the Garden of Eden was located in Independence, Missouri. It was located in this Western Hemisphere.
He even named two altars that were there, and he has no evidence except for his prophetic status to be able to name this. There was nothing that would be an indicator that this was actually the place that he said it was. And today, like you said yesterday, there's just no evidence to support that idea.
We do know that there were pictures in Wilford Wood's book, Joseph Smith Begins His Work. And in there, he has photographs. And one of the photographs I found was very intriguing because I think it was his wife peeking behind a tree. And there were all these broken rocks, it looked like. And it says how this was supposed to be the remnant of Adam's altar that was located in Adamondiamon. Now, there's no sign like that on the property today. But there is a big rock. Remember we went down and there was this big, huge rock that quite possibly could have been an altar of some thing, maybe, according to Joseph Smith, because he does talk about that. But again, there's no sign there to tell you this. I think if that was the rock that Smith may have been referring to, the Mormon Church certainly doesn't want to recognize it today. It's a fascinating area. If you've ever gone out there, it's a pretty area. There's no doubt about it. It's in the woods of Missouri. According to Joseph Smith, this is supposedly where Adam and Eve fled after they left the Garden of Eden in the Independence, Missouri area. They're in Missouri, and of course the tensions are again flaring up. There were always, it seemed like, there were tensions among the Mormons and the Missourians. But now that Joseph Smith's there, the tensions are going to increase also. But not only were there tensions between the Mormons and the Missouri locals, there's also tension between Joseph Smith and some of the leaders within the Mormon Church.
While the tensions fomented between the two groups, serious conflict appeared between Joseph and some of the other church leaders. Before Joseph's arrival, two of the Whitmer brothers, David and John, and William W. Phelps, also known as W.W. Phelps, had sold their property in Jackson County contrary to Joseph's orders. On March 10, a church court in Missouri excommunicated them. Complaints against Oliver Cowdery for, quote, vexatious lawsuits falsely insinuating that Joseph Smith was guilty of adultery, selling his lands in Jackson County, leaving his calling for the sake of filthy lucre, and turning to the practice of law, end quote, led to his excommunication on April 12, 1838.
Now, when I'm going through that list there, first of all, what strikes my mind is, and maybe there's some details that I'm not aware of, but who is Joseph Smith to tell these people what to do with their property or what to do with their careers?
Haven't you always said, Bill, that if you don't want to be a cult, then stop acting like one? And this is what cults do. They tell you how to live your personal lives.
Well, when you get to the part about how Oliver Cowdery was accused of falsely insinuating that Joseph Smith was guilty of adultery, well, in the eyes of Oliver Cowdery, certainly if he was in the inner circle, which I think he was, he would have heard these rumblings or heard these rumors or known for a fact some of the relationships that Joseph Smith was having with women during that time. And he certainly would have seen that as adultery unless he was convinced that the law of plural marriage was going on. Now, remember, plural marriage was not announced publicly at this time. It was not going to be announced publicly until 1852, after the Mormons had left the Midwest and gone to the Salt Lake Valley. So if Cowdery knows of some of these things that Joseph Smith is doing with these other women, wouldn't it make sense that he would accuse Joseph Smith of adultery? Now, why would Joseph Smith not accept that charge? Because he doesn't think his behavior is adulterous. He's telling people God's telling him this. Now, again, he's only telling a very close circle of people about this. Most people aren't supposed to know what's going on.
And that's not the way this church is supposed to work. I mean, we always hear about things that take place as far as voting and for confirmation purposes, and none of that's taking place except in the privacy of these men's lives. I think most Mormons would think that Thomas S. Monson could not do that, come up with his own personal revelation and live the way that he thinks is the best way to live because, quote-unquote, God told me to do this. They would say, wait a minute, where's the voting process? Where is the accountability of the other general authorities?
Oftentimes when I'm talking to Mormons about this subject and Smith's behavior during this time and what I would consider to be adulterous behavior, Mormons, as we've talked about many times, tend to give Joseph Smith a pass. Okay, they tend to look the other way. But what would they think, let's say, if Thomas Monson, the current leader of the Mormon Church, was starting to behave the way Joseph Smith behaved during the late 1830s, early 1840s, up until his death in 1844? Would they say to our faces that they could easily tolerate it because Thomas Monson is the prophet of the church and he's allowed to do things like that? I don't think they would.
No.
I don't think they would at all. So I have to ask our Mormon listeners, why do you allow Joseph Smith to get away with this? If you were living during that time, this kind of stuff wouldn't bother you? His relationships with all these women wouldn't bother you? You would still want to sustain this man as a prophet of God and follow his dictates?
But Bill, let's give the benefit of the doubt. A lot of Mormon listeners out here right now are hearing this and maybe hearing this whole series and have never heard this before. That's why I think we're suggesting perhaps they pick this book up, Mormon Enigma, pick up some of the other books and see really what the truth is about your founder.
I think the next paragraph that starts on page 71, where it starts with 2 weeks after Emma gave birth to Alexander, Sidney Rigdon harangued the church members over their laxity in allowing excommunicated leaders to remain in the area. Read that portion because if you're a Mormon, listen carefully to what these two Mormon authors have to say about this.
Eventually, 83 Mormons signed an ultimatum giving the dissenters 3 days to get out of Far West. While Oliver Cowdery, the Whitmers, and Lyman Johnson rode to Liberty for legal aid, their families were thrown into the street and their belongings strewn about by the Mormons. Oliver was stunned and blamed Rigdon for influencing Joseph to become an enemy. Oliver had lived in Emma's home, and she, in turn, had received warm hospitality from the Whitmer and Johnson families. She could only have been saddened by this brutal treatment.
Now, here's what I think we need to focus on. These were people who had basically lost faith in Mormonism. They had come to see Joseph Smith maybe as a fallen prophet, whatever. You could argue all you want. Well, yeah, but they still believed in the Book of Mormon. That's a whole other argument at this point. The fact is they've lost faith in Mormonism as it's set up right now. They've become dissenters. And what happens to them? Sidney Rigdon doesn't like that they are living among the faithful Mormons. He comes up with this salt sermon, and according to two Mormon historians, James B. Allen and Glenn Leonard, in The Story of the Latter-day Saints, page 121, it says that on June 19th, Sidney Rigdon's feelings welled up and burst forth in a heated oration sometimes called the salt sermon. He drew from the scriptural text, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its favor, wherewith shall it be salted?" This is what is starting this problem. Why is it that Sidney Rigdon and these other 80-plus Mormons who signed this statement wanting the dissenters to get out of Far West, wait a minute, weren't they the same ones complaining about being pushed out of Kirtland or being pushed out of other areas where they once lived? We hear Mormons all the time complaining how they were persecuted and harangued, and you've heard us on this show say that that was not right. But now, why is it okay for the Mormons to now be the persecutors of those who don't agree? And here we find in this book, it says that their families were thrown into the street and their belongings strewn about by the Mormons.
I think it's vital that we get both sides of the story. I think a lot of Mormons have only heard the one side, and so it's always everyone else's fault, not the Mormons' fault. But here we see that there were oftentimes causes for the persecution that they had to go through.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. We need to hear both sides of the story. And unfortunately, many members of the LDS Church have not heard the other side of the story because they only get their information from church publications.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. When trying to understand the doctrines of our Latter-day Saint friends, family members, and co-workers, it can be very difficult to know what to believe. In his resource titled, In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations, Mormonism Research Ministry's Bill McKeever compiles some of the very best Mormon quotations that will help you better understand what LDS leaders and scholars have said on such issues as atonement, exaltation, and pre-existence. Written in an encyclopedic format, In Their Own Words provides quotes on literally dozens of issues, alphabetically listed for quick reference that can be found in a matter of seconds. No more wondering what Mormonism's leaders have said on any topic, and this resource is available in both book format as well as on CD disc. Just load the PDF file onto your computer and you're ready to do valuable research. These are the very best quotes that Mormonism Research Ministry uses on a regular basis. In Their Own Words is available now at mrm.org. Again, mrm.org. Get it today.